For BBS Radio, this is Lexi Ross with Health Frontiers. Tonight we're going to address a very interesting topic, and that is hair color and cosmetic products that women use that when they often don't realize how toxic they are. And our guest tonight is Lisa Saul, who has her own salon, and she specializes in giving perms and doing hair color that's non-toxic. Good evening, Lisa.
Good evening.
It's nice to have you on the show.
Thank you.
Can you speak up just a little? I can barely hear you, honey.
Okay.
How did you ever get interested in educating people to the fact that hair color was toxic?
Well, in 1990, I was pregnant with my son, and at that time, I was teaching hair color for an Italian hair color company. So I was working in the salon full-time and doing hair color all day, and then I was traveling around and teaching other stylists how to use this hair color. And I started getting rashes on my wrists and having sinus problems. So I thought, well, if this is doing this to my body, what's it doing to my unborn child? So I started looking for alternatives, and I found someone in California that was making a non-toxic hair color. And so in 1991, when my son was 8 months old, I opened up a salon with the intention of working in a non-toxic environment. And after using the color for a couple of years, I bought out the person that was making the hair color for me and set up a hair color lab and started experimenting with ingredients and removing ingredients and adding more natural ingredients. And that's how I came up with our non-toxic hair color.
Wow. Well, what were the toxic ingredients that you eliminated? I mean, which, you know, the kind of ingredients that you would find, say, in ordinary hair products.
Well, in ordinary hair color, the preservatives are usually not natural. We use grapefruit seed extract as a preservative and vitamin E and rosemary antioxidant. But in conventional hair colors, usually the preservatives would be sulfites, which may cause sensitivity for certain people and make them cough, and also parabens.
Would that be the same sulfite that they put in wine?
Yes.
Really? That's very interesting.
And some people are sensitive to that.
I'm definitely sensitive to it.
And there are other ingredients, too, in conventional hair color. First of all, the percentage of oxidative dyes, which is the chemical that makes the color actually work in permanent hair color, varies from brand to brand. But not only that, some conventional hair colors have something called chemical drivers, such as phenoxyethanol or propylene glycol. And what those do is it drives the oxidative dyes into the hair, but also into the bloodstream.
Wow.
So we don't use chemical drivers in our color. Some other companies may use a combination of having some sodium lauryl sulfate and propylene glycol in the same formulation. And those particular chemicals, when they hold hands, make a third toxic byproduct.
So explain to the listeners what those two toxins, and they show up in a lot of different cosmetics. And if you could explain some of the attributes and how they're used in other industries, that would be great.
Sodium lauryl sulfate is a detergent that's used in a lot of shampoos.
My understanding is they use it to cut car grease, too, or something like that. It's used in the automobile industry.
It can be, and even in the hair industry, in perms, ammonium thioglycolate, which is the common ingredient in perms for Caucasian hair, you can also find that in drain cleaners.
Is that
right? For the bathroom.
Wow.
So there is some crossover, even in the food industry and the cosmetic industry. Petroleum is one ingredient that, according to the National Toxicology Program's assessment on mammary carcinogens, petroleum has a contaminant called PAH, or polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbon. And that particular chemical was 2.6 times more elevated in women that had breast cancer than women that didn't. And that's petroleum products. So think about all the lipsticks that are made with petroleum and lotions and hair products. in the ethnic market, and there's a toxic byproduct from petroleum that actually adheres to the DNA in the mammary tissue.
Wow. Is that, now, are these two chemicals also, I mean, found in perms and hair colors? I mean, coloring agents?
Which chemical are you referring to?
The sodium,
sodium lauryl sulfate and prolyl glycol?
Yeah, yeah.
They could be in perms, yeah, and it could be in a lot of other products, too, in shampoos and lotions and a lot of different products. People need to start looking at ingredients. The problem is certain ingredients may not be toxic in certain quantities, and how are you going to know what the quantity is of that ingredient in a product? There's one there's one ingredient called phthalates. And that particular ingredient can cause birth defects if it's in a certain percentage in a product. It's found in nail polish. It's found in one very popular night cream that has 20% phthalates in it, which is extremely toxic.
I don't suppose you would be willing to talk about some of the lines that have these toxic ingredients, would you?
I really don't want to name call, but I'll tell a good place that people can go to research their products, and that's the Environmental Working Group's website. It's ewg.org.
Okay.
They have a website called Skin Deep, and you can actually put in an ingredient to see the toxicity level, or you can put in the name of a product that you've been using.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, now, when in your salon, I know that you're doing the more natural hair coloring agents. What kind of dyes are you actually using? Are you using, like, plant substances, or what is the makeup of your chemicals?
We have a variety of different types of hair colors that we use. The hair color that we manufacture and make ourselves is called Eco Colors, and you can read about it at ecocolors.net. That particular hair color is a permanent hair color. It is low PPD, which a lot of people are concerned about PPD. People think PPD, if it has PPD, it's going to cause cancer. It's not necessarily true.
What is PPD?
It's an oxidative dye. It's a chemical, paraphenylene diamine. It is one chemical that some people develop sensitivities to and cause allergic reaction. So if someone might be allergic to PPD, and one product doesn't necessarily mean they're going to react to Eco Colors. It depends on the percentage of PPD, whether the other product has chemical drivers in it, a lot of different things. But we always recommend that people do an allergy patch test before every application, because allergies is not something you want to mess with. You can develop allergies over time.
When we talk about using some of these substances and the buildup, you know, if you're coming in for a perm every, 2 months, or how often do women have perms? About 6 weeks or 2 months?
It really varies from person to person, but actually I have chosen not to do permanent waves because of the fumes, and I didn't want to expose myself to that. When you get a permanent, the solution breaks down the sulfur bonds in your hair and produces something called hydrogen sulfide. And that particular gas, if you're inhaling it on a daily basis, can cause respiratory problems.
I would imagine.
So it's something that I don't choose to do on a regular basis because I don't want to expose myself to the fumes. But, and for hair color, people that color their hair once a month usually, it depends on what hair color brand they're using and what they're exposing themselves to, and not all brands are created equal. So when a study comes out about hair color and they just lump all permanent hair colors into one category and say all permanent hair colors, it's not really very accurate because they're not all the same. They all have different types of ingredients, and like I said, Eco Colors has mostly natural ingredients except for the oxidative dyes. But another thing about hair color, permanent hair color, is there's a trend now for the non-ammonia colors, and the alternative for ammonia is a chemical called ethanolamine. That particular chemical you can read about on the EWG.org website. It's an immune system detoxic. It's an immune system toxicant. It may cause allergies, and it's not intended to be left on the skin. So we chose not to use that particular chemical and to use very small amounts of ammonia necessary to open up the hair shaft when you're covering gray and also to lighten the hair. But we're not using toxic amounts of anything in our hair color.
So you wouldn't have any ammonia or, you know, say for instance if you're bleaching someone's hair, what would be the chemicals that you would use instead of a normal bleaching agent?
Actually, bleach, there are different types of bleach on the market. And generally, in the professional bleaches, they're all using the same chemical, which is called persulfate. That particular chemical, when it's in a powder form, that's when it's toxic. So when the hairdresser is mixing up the bleach powder with a developer, which would be a low level of hydrogen peroxide, they need to be very careful not to inhale the powder when they're mixing it. Once it's mixed, it's not really toxic to the body.
Now,
if it's mixed with a very strong developer, it can cause burns on the scalp. But I just read a study about hair dye that was done in August of 2005 by the Department of Epidemiology, the School of Public Health at the University of North Carolina, and they were talking about maternal exposure to hair dye, and I was surprised to see that temporary hair dyes are more strongly associated with problems in pregnant women than any other hair dye.
Well, I would think they would be. I mean, if you're using hydrogen peroxide when you're bleaching hair, hydrogen peroxide is a fairly harmless product. I mean, they use it intravenously now to cure cancer in some cases. And if I'm not mistaken, Edgar Cayce used to recommend it for a number of things, even to take enemas with it. So that in itself is not a very harmful product. And dyes, you know, conversely, can be very toxic. I mean, do you take like plant substances for your dyes or?
Not for the oxidative dyes, which is the permanent hair color. Plant substances are not small enough to get inside the hair shaft.
I see.
Henna, which is a plant that is commonly used to dye the hair, many times can be spiked with oxidative dyes. There's no such thing as a black henna. If there is a black henna, it's either going to have in it high amounts of oxidative dye, which may or may not be toxic. It may even have other things in it like metals that add color to the hair. With hennas, I'd be very careful and always do, anytime you color your hair, always do a strand test to see what color it's going to be on your hair. Because just because it says it's brown on the box does not necessarily mean it's going to be brown on your hair, especially with henna. There was a study done in Denmark in 2002. They tested 23 hair colors and 4 hennas to see what ingredients were in the products. Several of the hair colors had illegal ingredients that had been outlawed in the European Union, and 3 out of the 4 hennas did not even contain the Lawsonia plant.
Oh, really? So, and those substances are very toxic, I take it.
Metals are definitely toxic. There are certain dyes on the market that are called progressive dyes. The more you use them, the more color you'll get. Those can be very toxic because they have lead and other metals in them.
So these high-profile colors now, the ones like that when someone is doing red hair and they'll have like a sherry wine color, I'm guessing those are pretty toxic colors.
It really depends on the brand and the ingredients and the percentage of dye in them.
I see. Well, what of all the colors that women use to do their hair, which ones would be the most toxic or tend to be more toxic?
I would say the powdered hair colors might have more oxidative dye in them, and also the darker colors.
I see. So like the browns and blacks would be definitely more toxic.
More than likely. I'd also look for chemical drivers such as phenoxyethanol and sodium lauryl sulfate and propylene glycol in the same formulation.
Propylene glycol is the one that really turns up in practically every shampoo. I mean, it's even in shampoos in health food stores, I've noticed.
Yes, it, depending on the concentration, it is a penetration enhancer, and it depends on the purity of propylene glycol. There may be some toxic byproducts associated with it.
Well,
there's insufficient safety data, but it can also be a skin sensitizer.
Okay. So take us through why hair color actually works. What is the whole process?
There's three different types of hair color. There's a temporary hair color that sits on the outside of the hair shaft, and it washes away every time you use it. There's a semi-permanent hair color that also sits on the hair shaft, but it lasts a little bit longer than a temporary hair color. It may last 2 to 3 weeks. And then there's a permanent hair color that actually goes inside of the hair shaft, and a chemical reaction occurs inside of the hair shaft, and the color is trapped inside of the hair.
What kind of hair is the most difficult to color?
Gray hair.
Yeah, it
just depends on how resistant the gray is, but I would say gray hair would be the most difficult to color.
Why is that?
Because generally gray hair is more coarse than any other type of hair. It has a thicker cuticle layer. And I would say Asian hair would also be in that category because it has a very thick cuticle layer, like a layer of glass. It's very difficult to get into it.
I see. Well, how many years have you been doing this, Lisa?
I've been doing hair for 23 years, and I've been manufacturing our hair color since 2000. But I've been using it in my salon since 1991.
And the colors that you use, are they as stable, say, as some of the, you know, big-name product lines like Clairol or L'Oreal or some of those lines?
They are permanent. The colors that we manufacture are permanent, but they are a little bit different because they're not so heavily pigmented with oxidative dyes. There is one professional line that I won't mention the name of that brags they use twice the amount of dye stuff. So they get really rich, vivid, bright colors, but they're twice as toxic. So what I'd say about eco colors is it has a tendency to be a little more translucent than mainstream hair color, and you might want to choose a color one level darker than you're normally used to. But again, always do a strand test before you apply it on your entire head and end up with something that you don't like.
Well, let's talk a little bit about perms. I know you don't do perms per se, but you do have someone in your salon that does do perms. So how would your perms, the perms that you're doing, differ from, say, any other kind of permanent wave or someone, you know, a wave that someone would be familiar with?
Well, there are many brands on the market. And in our salon, we use a brand that uses more natural ingredients, but more importantly, it's an acidic perm. The hair has an acid pH, and acid perms leave the hair in better condition than an alkalizing perm. There are two types of ingredients for perms, for perm use. One is called ammonium 5-glycolate. The other type of perm would be more for ethnic hair, and that would be sodium hydroxide or calcium hydroxide. The sodium hydroxide and the calcium hydroxide would be a lot more alkalizing and stronger, which is needed for ethnic hair because of the shape of the hair itself. It needs a stronger product in order to break it down. And so what happens with either the ammonium thioglycolate or the sodium hydroxide is the product goes in and it breaks down the sulfur bonds in the hair. The sulfur bonds in the hair determine whether the hair is straight or curly. It breaks them down, and then it actually reforms them into the shape you want it to be. If you want it to be straight, you would comb through the hair with the product on. There are some, like the Japanese straighteners that recently came out. Those use silk protein, and the stylists will use a hot flat iron to actually straighten the hair with the product. Or you could roll it in a roller to make it curly, and then you actually put a chemical on that reforms the sulfur bonds in the direction you want them to be reformed.
Well, ordinarily, wouldn't that have been some kind of ammonia product? What is the product that once you get, you roll the hair up, and then there's always that really strong smelling solution that goes on to the perm, to the curlers.
Mm-hmm.
What is that usually?
It's called ammonium thioglycolate.
Okay.
And that is also used in drain cleaner.
Oh, my God.
So if you left it on the hair for too long, you could actually melt the hair. Depending on the strength of the product you use, we use a very mild one in my salon. And when it breaks down the sulfur bonds, it releases hydrogen sulfide, which smells like rotten eggs.
I see. So, in other words, the perms that you're using still have to rely on those products. Is that right?
They still do, but they're very mild.
I see. So it's just a lower contrast.
And we recommend that you know what kind of product is being put on your hair. Is it a thioperm? Is it a sodium hydroxide perm? Because you can't mix the two. If you've had a thioperm and then a stylist decides to use a sodium hydroxide perm on your hair, those two chemicals are not compatible and your hair will basically melt off.
What is a thioperm?
That's an acid perm. That's what's generally used on Caucasian hair, ammonium thioglycolate.
I see. Well, now, what are some of the things that can occur? I mean, I'm sure you've had some experience over the years where women have developed various allergies. And, you know, a lot of times when women go in for a lot of these services, they'll have strange side effects, but they don't relate the side effects to having had their hair colors or having a perm. What are some of the stories that you could share with us that, you know, that could help people identify when some of these things start happening?
People react differently because every body is different. So the reactions may vary. We rarely see any allergic reactions in our salon, but I will say occasionally someone will be allergic. It may be to another ingredient that's in the product. And women are generally more sensitive around their cycle as well. I also don't recommend that any woman that's going through chemotherapy or is immunosuppressed to do any kind of chemical process to their hair. Even though it may be non-toxic, it's still a chemical and they need to just let their body rest. But in general, an allergic reaction may be from an itchy scalp right after the product has been applied or several days later. Some people might complain, I've heard people complain with conventional color that they feel nauseous or have headaches for several days after the color. Anytime you feel any kind of discomfort, you should let your stylist know and they should remove the product immediately.
When you say remove the product, mean take it out of the person's hair? Or?
Yes, take it off of the hair, shampoo it.
I see. So that's during the process. So after the process has already been done, then there's not much you can do about it, is there?
No, you could take an antihistamine or in the natural world, people have been recommended to take quercetin or nettles, which is a natural antihistamine. In the conventional medicinal world, people would take Benadryl if they're having some sort of allergic reaction.
What's the worst case scenario? What's the worst you've ever heard, say, from some other salon of what might happen to someone?
I have actually talked to clients that have reacted through the hair color company, not through our hair color, but clients that have reacted to other hair color brands, and they've actually had to go to the hospital because their throat swelled up, because their face swelled, and they couldn't breathe. An allergic reaction can be very serious. People can die from an allergic reaction through anaphylactic shock. So it's not something that should be taken lightly.
I would imagine it's a low percentage of people that happens to, though. Is that correct?
It is, but even so, there have been some studies done on women that were allergic to PPD, which is one of the oxidative dyes that's in the darker colors.
Uh-huh.
And even though they had an allergic reaction to the skin test, they really wanted to have their hair done, and they did it anyway.
Oh my God.
Women that had minimal allergic reactions continued to do it, and the women that had extreme allergic reactions did not continue to color their hair. So I recommend if you always do a patch test before every hair color application, and every hair color kit will come with a patch test instructions. If you're having it done in the salon, let your stylist know that you may have allergic reaction and to please do a patch test before your service. And that's done by applying a drop of the color on the crease of the elbow or behind the ear. It stays there for 24 hours, so you can put a Band-Aid on it. Just make sure you don't get it wet when you shower. And within that 24 hours, listen to your body and see if you're feeling dizzy, nauseous, headache, or if you have any kind of dermal reaction like redness or stinging or irritation. And if you do, remove the product immediately and don't use it.
I see. What other facets of this whole realm of using natural colors can you bring to the table to help enlighten people?
Well, the EcoColors permanent hair color is not 100% natural, but it does have a lot of natural ingredients like lanolin, lecithin, lavender extract. If you're allergic to essential oils, check the ingredients because it does have some essential oils in it. But it does have oxidative dyes. It does have a very small amount of ammonia to cover the gray, and it does use peroxide. Although our peroxide is buffered with flax and castor oil, so it's very nutritive. The color in general is very nutritive. One thing I would recommend for people coloring their hair at home, this is a very common mistake that people make. When they color their hair, you should always apply the color full strength to the new growth, which would be your gray area or at your roots. If you have previously colored ends, never run a full-strength product over previously colored ends. That's how you're going to damage your hair. No matter how gentle the color is, if you run it full strength through your ends every single time, your ends are going to get lighter and lighter, probably redder and redder, and drier. So it's really important if you're going to color previously colored ends that you take whatever's left in your hair color bottle, dilute it by half with water to run through that previously colored end.
Wow, I didn't realize you just diluted that way. That's very interesting.
And with henna, not all hennas are created equal. A brown henna may not be brown. Do a strand test to determine. A black henna may have indigo in it, and it may turn your hair blue or green. So
what about all these wild colors that kids are wearing nowadays? Are they as toxic or are they just temporary?
Some of them, I actually have been looking at ingredients because we have an assistant in the salon that likes to have
hot pink.
Fashion hot colors. And
yeah.
So she brings in a new product she finds in the grocery store and says, is this toxic? Can I use this? And sometimes I say yes and sometimes I say no. And every product varies. Generally, one product that is okay, that I will say is okay, is a product called Manic Panic. It does have FD&C dyes in it. If you have a child that is sensitive to dyes, don't let them use that product. If you have a lot of dyes in your diet and you're using that type of dye on your hair, the odds are that you're exposing yourself to a lot of dyes, and
well,
it may not be good for you.
Yeah, talk about, there is dyes in so many products that we use. Talk about some of the products that would have dyes that people would be consistently exposed to.
Well, it's really in everything, in food, in shampoo, and a lot of times the labels are not truthful. My daughter won some lip gloss at a bowling alley, at an arcade, and I told her she couldn't use it until I looked at the ingredients, and it was purple. And I looked at the ingredients, and the ingredients said castor oil, water, and less lanolin, or something like that. Well, castor oil, water, and lanolin are not purple.
That's right.
So they're not being truthful about what's really in the product.
I had a woman that called me to try to sell me some product, some kind of miracle, something you could drink it, you could put it on your skin, you know, and the formula was supposed to be channeled by a man who, he said Jesus gave him the formula. And so she gave me a bottle, and it was green, and the minute I looked at it, I realized that there was whatever it is, green dye number two or whatever, and I said to her, you know, I really have a hard time believing that Jesus told this gentleman to put green dye number two in this formula. You know, it was just so comical because, you know, there, people make so many claims about things that are going to be good for you, and people don't stop and realize or stop and read the labels, like you said, and you really don't know what you're putting in your body. It's pretty scary.
Well, for cosmetics, it is scary because the food is definitely more regulated than cosmetics. And like I said earlier about petroleum, the FDA restricts petroleum in food to no more than 10 parts per million. But there's no regulation in personal products for how much petroleum can be in a product.
Is that right?
There's very little regulation, period, for
besides
cosmetics.
Sodium lauryl sulfate and propylene
glycol?
Propylene glycol. What are two of the other substances that are the most, that found most often in cosmetics, lipsticks, powders, rouges, eyeshadows, that would be the most toxic?
There's another impurity found in one in every four personal products. It's called ethylene oxide. And there's evidence of toxicity in male and female mammary glands. That, there can be a number of names for that. I would look for PEG, that's P as in Paul, E as in elephant, G as in girl,
uh-huh.
Polyethylene, or anything that says oxanol. Non-oxanol is used in a lot of different products, including birth control, and that particular chemical, non-oxanol 9, is an endocrine disruptor.
Oh, my goodness.
So it's kind of ironic that you use it in birth control, but then it causes a problem in your endocrine system. Another product to look for that may cause breast cancer would be 1,3-butadiene. It's an impurity in butane. And it's in a lot of aerosol propellants. Now, if this particular ingredient exceeds 0.1%, there's clear evidence of carcinogenicity in mammary glands. So how do you know if the product has more than 0.1%? You don't. You can call the company and ask for the percentage, and hopefully they'll tell you. But can't say for sure whether they will or not.
What about eyeshadows, Lisa? Are they particularly toxic because of the vibrant colors?
Some of them may have dyes in them that are toxic, and some of them may not. One particular brand that I know is a very reputable and healthy brand would be Jane Iredale, I-R-E-D-A-L-E.
Really?
Some of the less expensive drugstore brands may have some toxic ingredients, including phthalates.
Now, this is a question I've always wondered about. You know, you can go to the department store and you can buy the most expensive lines like Christian Dior and name some of them, Estee Lauder and all these. Yeah, rather expensive. I mean, you have to pay $25 for a tube of lipstick or, you know, $25 to $30 for a little thing of eyeshadow. And is that really any purer than, say, cosmetics that you would go to a drugstore and inexpensive cosmetics? You know, like Revlon makes some inexpensive things. And because it seems like the colors are as vibrant in the more expensive lines as they are in the least less expensive lines, so it seems to me like they would be using similar chemicals.
lot of times you're paying for packaging and marketing.
That's what I would think.
But I have found very few lines in the department store or the drugstore that I would personally use because of the ingredients in the product. And I can't possibly tell you every single ingredient to avoid, but you can educate yourself by going to the EWG website and looking for a product that you may like to purchase or that you have purchased in the past, and maybe they have something about it on the website to let you know the toxicity of the ingredients in that product. And that's a good place to start.
Well, can you think of any other, I mean, like bath salts, or are there any other things that particular, you know, that need a warning for people who may be innocent and have no idea, you know, what they're getting into?
There's so many things out there that,
well, let me give you an
toxic
example.
Ingredients.
Let me give you an example.
Okay.
I was with a friend yesterday who is from England, and she left her powder at home, and so she wanted to go to one of these new cosmetic stores.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's called Utney or Utla. I can't remember the name of it now. But the girl immediately pulled out a lip plumper that is supposed to make your lips look fuller, because the rage now is to have full lips. What's the story with those?
It really depends on the ingredients. Generally, those have collagen in them that plump up the lips. And that in itself may not be toxic, but it may be all the preservatives or the penetration enhancers in there that are holding hands with that particular chemical that may not be good for you. I definitely would avoid petroleum products.
What about collagen injections themselves? I mean, is that my understanding, now I might be wrong about this, is that they don't last long and that they have to be repeated, and I was wondering what the toxicity levels on those things are.
As far as I know, I don't know if there's any toxicity for that, unless there are other preservatives in there to preserve the collagen that you don't know about, or other chemicals in there with it.
Well,
and
if they're
true
not
about the lip plumper, it doesn't last very long, and you have to redo it.
Well, how long, say, if you get collagen injections in your lips, how long does that usually last?
I have no idea.
I see.
I don't know anything about the alternative things that the dermatologists are doing for Botox or injections or anything like that, because I don't do any of that.
Uh-huh. So you have no information on the Botox and how toxic that is?
I have read that it's extremely toxic.
Yeah, that's what I've read, too.
Some people have gotten so sick from it that they've got something like illness where they couldn't even get out of bed.
Oh, is that right?
But,
well, I mean, it seems like it would be absorbed into your brain if you're putting it in your forehead or putting it into your cheekbones or around your mouth. I mean, those are like the most sensitive areas of your face. I mean, that goes, and it's so close to your brain. I certainly wouldn't want to try it.
I think that the most important thing that people can do for their beauty is take care of their body from the inside out.
Thank you.
And that would be to make sure you get enough antioxidants in your diet, whether you supplement or get it through food, to make sure that you get enough greens in your diet, that you drink enough water. If you're going to use products to enhance your skin or your hair, make sure that it's natural ingredients, including natural preservatives. And there's a lot of great products on the market. Jojoba oil is one great natural ingredient that's good for the hair and the skin. You can put essential oils into the jojoba oil and massage it into your scalp. It removes buildup on your scalp. If your hair is texturized or long or has a tendency to be dry, run it through your ends liberally. It's a very light oil. It's very similar to the molecular structure of the natural oils in your body. And massage the jojoba oil into your scalp and your ends. Let it sit, and then shampoo it out. and your hair will feel so much softer. So for people that have dry hair, that's a great natural conditioning treatment to do.
I see. Can you suggest any others?
Well, I also recommend using jojoba on your skin or coconut oil. Coconut oil is a nice natural lubricant. It's great for the skin. It's also really good for the body, so I would also recommend cooking with it.
What about mink oil? Mink oil is supposed to... I've been told that mink oil is the closest oil to the skin, the oil that's produced by the body. Is that true?
I have no idea because it's an animal product, and I really don't try and use that sort of thing.
I see. So you're not using any animal products at all then, huh?
No.
Oh, that's wonderful. Now, do you have your own line of, say, lipsticks and creams and things, or are you mainly just the eco colors?
I'm just doing the hair color right now.
Is that a plan to, you know, to go for in the future, or is that... I mean, is that something you might consider?
We might consider doing shampoos and conditioners in the future. Maybe lipstick. I can't really say which direction. But right now we're just focusing on the hair color and just trying to let people know that there are alternatives.
I heard a story about, we should talk about chemicals used in black women's hair too, because I heard a story that there was an embalmer, and when he went to embalm black women's hair, when he would lift up their scalp, that there was this gooey white substance right under their scalp. And I didn't know if that could be caused by all the straightening that they do their hair or by the petroleum products.
Because
I understand
petroleum.
Yeah.
And it also, if you use it as a moisturizer on your skin, it's going to sit under your skin as well. It's really... it's a moisture barrier, so it's going to really prevent moisture from getting in. And it does sit under the skin, and it does build up under the skin.
You're talking about petroleum, though.
Petroleum.
Yeah.
There are a lot of products. There's still, in the African-American market, there's still a lot of petroleum going on out there. But there are some more natural, non-toxic products that are coming to the forefront. So it is changing. Slowly but surely, it is changing.
Is the let me ask you this: is, you know, the nail products, the artificial nails that women seem to be addicted to? I mean, I can't walk into a salon where they're putting those nails on. It just suffocates me, and I feel so sorry for the poor women that are having to work in those salons. How very toxic is that? And has there been any evidence? I mean, has there been any research to show how toxic it could be to the body? And don't the nails absorb those chemicals, the nail bed themselves?
They do. There can be a lot of nail bed damage from some of those really strong glues. I've seen it time and time again, and it takes years for the nail bed to recover. Also, in nail polish, I don't know of any non-toxic nail polish on the market. Nail polish contains phthalates. That particular chemical can be toxic to the body. It may cause breast cancer. It definitely has been shown to cause birth defects. I would recommend, if you're pregnant, not to polish your nails. I would recommend not using nail polish at all, really. And then as far as the glues and... The glues can definitely have toxic fumes, so the people that are working in that environment may end up having liver issues or other organ problems because of all that exposure to the fumes.
Well, I mean, separate and apart from the glue that they're using, the smell of the plastic nails themselves is so vile.
Some nail polish has formaldehyde and toluene in it, and some doesn't. And that
no, I'm talking about the artificial nails that people put on top of their nails.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the plastic ones that you go into these salons and you see a lot of the poor Oriental girls putting on these long plastic nails that everybody's, you know, using. Very
it's
common.
Not the plastic. It's actually the glues that you're smelling.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
So the plastic can't harm the body, it's the glue itself.
Well, I'm not sure that the nails are made of plastic. Some of them are made of silk. Some of them are made of other products. I'm not necessarily sure that they're made of plastic.
I see.
They might be made of some sort of resin.
Right. Well, isn't resin usually some kind of plastic product or petroleum product?
It may be, and actually when the resin is wet, the fume is extremely, extremely toxic. It depends. There's lots of different types of artificial nails, and it's been many, many years since I exposed myself to that. So there's a lot of new products out on the market, and I think they're all still very toxic.
I would think so.
But one of the other things to worry about in a nail salon, a lot of women get staph infections because of the cleanliness of the salon. They might use a tool on someone and then use the same tool on someone else and just stick it in a drawer in between clients and not disinfect. So you can get a lot of fungal infections by going to a nail salon. And I would, if you're going to go to a nail salon to get grooming on your hands and your feet, I would definitely make sure you watch and see what are they putting their tools in.
Uh-huh.
And make sure that it is a product that is going to kill the germs. You can ask them what product they're using.
And what are the best products to use
for
that?
Well, if I were to use something, I would use grapefruit seed extract.
Really?
But in conventional nail salons, they're probably using Barbicide, which is just a ammonia quaternary compound is what it's called, and it kills germs, but I choose not to expose to myself to that regularly because it is maybe a toxic chemical on repeated exposure.
So none of the shops would, for instance, have the same kind of equipment that, say, a doctor would have using tools and boiling his tools. What would a
some
doctor
of them use UV to disinfect, and some of them don't.
Uh-huh.
I would go in and watch and see. Watch the person before you and see what they do with the tools before they use them on you. And then the foot baths, you know, someone might have a fungus infection and they might not disinfect it before they put your feet in it.
That was what I was just going to mention is the foot bath. To me, it seems like that would be the most prevalent opportunity to have something that was really toxic or, you know, some kind of bacteria or fungus or something.
Well, and then if they're cutting your nails and using contaminated tools, there's a lot of ways that you can be infected. And a staph infection can be very serious. You can be hospitalized from it, and a lot of staph is antibiotic resistant and very difficult to get rid of.
Well, I mean, staph infection is pretty common in hospitals today. I know two different people who went into the hospital with, you know, and came out with staph.
Yes, it can be.
So if
the staff is not washing their hands, I didn't mention earlier that I have a degree from the Medical College of Georgia as a medical technologist.
Okay.
Before I became a hairdresser, and I did work in a hospital for many years in the operating room and in the laboratory, testing body fluids for different illnesses. So I do have a chemistry background before I decided to become a mad scientist and create hair color.
Well, we're glad you did, because there has to be some pioneers out there to educate people as to what they're putting on their bodies and in their bodies, and it's just amazing to me the amount of chemicals that women have been exposed to over the last, 50-100 years?
Yes.
I mean, people are just now beginning to get educated.
Yes, there used to be a product in hair color up until about 1980 that has been linked to lymphoma and bladder cancer in hairdressers and a lot of other illnesses. Now, so if you colored your hair before 1980, you have a higher incidence of becoming ill from the exposure to that particular chemical. And that particular chemical has been outlawed, and hopefully people are not using it in their product. You know, we're on the honor system, and hopefully people are forthright and put all of the ingredients that they use in their products.
Oh, this was a question that popped into my head. In the old days when you would go in for streaks, they would use rubber caps and pull the streaks out, and you know, the cap would sort of protect your head from the bleach. But nowadays they don't use caps, and the hairdressers are just wrapping aluminum foil into these very what I think are very unattractive streaks, because they look totally artificial as opposed to the more natural ones that used to be done several years ago. Can you comment on that?
I personally think you have more control using foil. We also use papers in our salon. There's lots of different tools that you can use to color the hair besides the cap. And really, as far as the amount of streaking that's done in the hair, that's totally up to the stylist. And every stylist has their own way of doing their art. Some of them do very thick, chunky streaks. Some of them do really fine streaks that look more natural. And it's up to you when you go in to have your hair done to let your stylist know, I want streaks that are as wide as a pencil, or I want streaks that are one-third of a pencil, or whatever, you know, 1 centimeter wide. And I want them to be very sparse on my head, or I want them to be every inch on my head. And you need to be able to learn to communicate with your stylist, and hopefully if you have a good stylist, they will lead you in the right direction to determine what it is that you want your hair to look like, because you can make really thick chunks with foils or papers, or you can make really baby fine streaks and it looks like it's your natural hair.
Well, would the, since aluminum is such a toxic substance, would that interact with the bleach or the colors that you're using?
No, it doesn't.
Okay.
I wouldn't be concerned about it.
I see.
You're not eating it, and it's not really absorbing into your skin.
Well, do you have, Lisa, anything else that you would like to share with our listeners about hair color as a warning, or, you know, just some of the facts that you feel are the most pertinent?
I wouldn't recommend that you perm and color your hair.
Really?
If you're going to do that, I would recommend that you use a semi-permanent color as opposed to a permanent color, because it's two chemical processes on your hair. And depending on your hair, not everyone's hair can handle two chemical processes. And it's just going to dry your hair out, and your hair is going to look unnatural and dry. I would also recommend that you ask your stylist to get you less toxic hair color, like Eco Color. It is sold in salons. We have a professional line and a home kit line.
Sell it for home?
We do.
Oh, that's amazing. That's wonderful.
So for those people that like to color their own hair, it is available to them. The home kit line only comes in 13 colors, and the professional line comes in 24 colors with 4 developers.
Wow.
So there's a lot more leeway for artistic expression for the hairdressers.
If someone's needing to make an appointment with your shop, it sounds like you're a very busy lady. How much in advance do they have to call?
About 2 weeks.
Is that right? Well, I tell you, Lisa, we're running out of time, but this has been very, very informative, and we've been talking to Lisa Saul, and she has a product called Eco Colors. Is there a number or a website or something you'd like to give again, Lisa?
The website address is ecocolors.net, ecocolors.net.
And also, I'd love for you to give the website name again for people who want to look up whatever products they're using and be guided to use some safe products.
That website would be the Environmental Working Group, ewg.org.
Well, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
This has been Lexi Ross with Health Frontiers, wishing you the best in natural healing. And thank you so much. Good night.